Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Last month, Defense Secretary Leanne Panetta announced that women no longer would be banned from combat positions in the military. The policy change means that female service members who make up some 14% of the ranks overall can qualify for a whole new realm of jobs and promotions and danger. But the debate over whether women should be assigned to combat has not gone away. What about pregnant women? What about women who are single parents? What about the draft? What about? Coming up later, we'll hear from a Pentagon reporter for the Stars and Stripes to talk about the nuts and bolts of the policy. And also the longtime conservative activist Phyllis Schlafly will join us. She opposes women in combat for a long time, has opposed women in combat, and hasn't changed her mind over the years. Joining us now is author and journalist Tanya Bianc. Lifetime's hit series Army Wives is based on her book, Army Wives, and she is a consultant to the show. Her new book is entitled Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. Welcome to the show, Tanya.
Thanks so much, Ann. Glad to be here.
A lot of references to Undaunted suggest your very good timing as an author. What were your thoughts about prospects for such a policy change going into the writing of this book?
Well, the book covers many, many years of research and work, and lifting the combat ban wasn't something I really thought of when I started working on this book. Servicewomen were already in the thick of it. We were well into Iraq, the Iraq War, when I started working on this project. So I was already very well aware of how our servicewomen were performing and sacrificing.
I wanted to talk to you about part of the subtitle of your book first, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. What does today's military mean to you in that context?
Today's military, what that means to me is everything that is going on behind the scenes in these women's lives, beyond caricature. Who is the woman behind the uniform? And that's really the reason I wanted to write this book, beyond the combat element that these women face, is what does it take to be a success in the military as a servicewoman? I knew already that professional success in the military often comes at a personal price for men and women, but women face their own set of challenges and problems, things that they often deal with out of the public view. And that is what I wanted to concentrate on in this book.
It's interesting because you go into reading the book and one thinks, I'm going to learn about women in the military. And of course you do, but you also learn about men in the military through this lens in a different way.
Well, absolutely. Some of the servicewomen in the book are married to fellow servicemen, and we call that a dual military marriage, where both the husband and wife are serving in uniform. And that is quite a challenge when you add children into the mix. And, of course, you can't write a book about servicewomen without servicemen, because they serve side by side.
My guest is Tanya Bianc. She's a journalist and the author of Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. We'd like to hear from our military women, veterans, or active in service now. Give us a call and tell us what you think about the combat issue. 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page, post your question or perhaps your comment there. Once again, we're looking for women in the military. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. In your introduction, Tanya, you broached the subject of women in combat with Candace, one of your four subjects, who says something to the effect that hell hath no fury if they don't send her into combat. So let's talk a little bit about what women already essentially are doing. Have they already been operating in combat roles, or they just don't call it that, or what?
Well, the last 10 plus years, 250,000 women have deployed. They've served side by side with men. And yes, they have been in what we call combat support roles as truck drivers, medics, intelligence officers, on and on. But what has happened, since this is asymmetric fighting, there's been no front lines, these service women have found themselves in combat. And almost 900 of them have received the Purple Heart for injuries. 152 have died. And what commanders have learned over the years is that they're a talented group of individuals. They're capable, and they're an integral part of the mission. And that is why General Dempsey and Leon Panetta decided to lift this ban last month.
What is your sense about the impact it's going to have on recruiting? Do you think it will improve recruiting, or might have, you know, one way or the other? Will it reduce recruiting of women, or maybe increase? What are your thoughts about that?
I don't think it's going to have a significant change on recruiting. I don't think any young woman today joins the military thinking that she's going to be held back or she's not going to be able to reach her full potential. And this is before this ban was lifted. Service women have thrived in the military despite this ban. And that, to me, tells you something about the talent pool. And there's been a cultural shift in the military over the last 10 years, where your battlefield commanders, they want the very best person for the job. If they are able to choose from a pool of servicemen and women, not the very best man or very best woman, the very best soldier or Marine, regardless of gender. And that's a cultural shift.
But it is a fact that without the combat experience, in some arms of the service or in some ways, you are limited to how far up you can go.
It's more of a challenge. If you look at the highest levels in the military, your general officer ranks, your flag ranks, 80% of those generals come from the combat arms branches. It's a very large branch, very important branch. It's the heart of the Marine Corps and the Army. And up until the lifting of this ban, women have not been able to serve in those branches. So, yes, women at the very highest levels in the military have been underrepresented. They make up 14.5% of the military, but they only make up 7% of the general officer ranks. Your senior non-commissioned ranks, they only make up 11% of those. So, yes, they are underrepresented. And lifting this ban over time, we may see a change in that.
Maneuvering the social world of the military for women is tricky, particularly depending on what your rank is. One of the subjects of your book said that in the military, perception is reality. So what you wear to the formal says something about you. It's surprising that that's still so much of an issue. Can you talk a little bit to people who aren't familiar with the military what a big deal the uniform is?
Well, perception is reality in the military. And I believe what you're referring to, Anne, in the book has to do with sometimes at military formals, the military balls, also in ROTC at the colleges with the cadets. Sometimes the service women or the female cadets in college are given a choice if they want to wear a gown instead of the uniform. And it's kind of a hotly contested issue because on the one side, if you're a soldier or if you're a cadet, then you should show up at the ball in a uniform, just like the men. And then there's the other side saying, well, it's just one night. It could boost morale.
Well, let's face it. The uniforms look better on men in a formal.
Well, yes.
I mean,
yes. And it's Yeah, the men are expected to be in the uniform. But I will say this, at a service academy such as West Point, mm-hmm. the female cadets will be in uniform. It's not an issue. But it is an interesting little point that I do bring out in the book. When you're looking at these gender roles and the blurred gender roles, and sometimes it can bring about some confusion on what do we do when we're looking at our societal norms with gender roles, and how do those equate to military culture?
It's interesting, this importance of the standardization of the uniform. It wasn't until 2009 that they switched the kind of boots that the women wore. They were just wearing smaller sizes of men boots because they realized it was damaging their feet.
Yeah, and each service does it a little differently. But uh-huh. if you look at the Army, the ACU uniform, that's their utility uniform that they deploy in, that they train in, your camouflage basically uniform. The Army women are still wearing the male uniform. They are looking into there is a pilot program that's designing a female version of that uniform. But what's interesting, Anne, is my sister, who is an Army colonel, has been in the Army for almost 24 years. I asked her, I said, how's it feel to, wear a man's uniform to work every day? And she looked at me and she said, oh, I've always thought of it as being unisex, which was so interesting to me because it told me a lot about my sister and that she's very secure in her place. In the military. And maybe it takes mentality like that and a way of thinking that she has her place in the Army.
Yes, but.
Yeah.
There's the issue of maternity clothes. And I was truly surprised to read that women who are pregnant in the military very typically and are expected to almost wear their husband's uniforms.
And that was an interesting little part in the book as well, with Major O'Brien when she was pregnant, and since her husband was also in the military, she would just go to his side of the closet and wear his uniform. It didn't matter that he was 6 feet tall and she was 5 feet six, and he was 200 pounds and she was 125, but it worked. And a lot of people, that's what I found so fascinating about researching this book, are just little things like that most of us never think about. Mm-hmm. So, yes, many service women, because they don't want to wear the maternity uniform, they want to put it off as long as possible because there is a stigma to wearing that uniform, mm-hmm. That they'll try to wear a larger size if they're not married to a serviceman, then they'll try to find a friend where they can borrow the uniform. And one of the reasons there's a stigma to wearing this maternity uniform is because it doesn't look very professional. And servicemen and women, it's very important to look good.
Yeah, the bane of all pregnant working women.
And that's true, too, yes.
My guest is Tanya Bianc. She's a journalist and the author of Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Service Women in Today's Military. Tanya is going to stay with us coming up, Phyllis Schlafly, to join us in the conversation about the new policy allowing women in combat positions in the military. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Bill Hader makes his final appearance as a cast member of Saturday Night Live this weekend. On the next Fresh Air, we feature our interview with Hader. One of his characters is Stefan, the New York City correspondent who gives inappropriate recommendations for family entertainment.
If you're looking to get festive with your family, I've got the perfect place for you. New York's hottest club is Hey!
Join us.
Today at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Columbus on the Record brings you the week's top news stories with in-depth, thoughtful, and balanced analysis. From the Ohio State House to Columbus City Hall, WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson and his panel discuss the issues and stories impacting life in Central Ohio. The show goes beyond the headlines to explore all sides of each issue. Watch Columbus on the Record Friday nights at 8:30 on WOSU TV and watch full episodes online at WOSU.org/COTR.
Welcome back to All Sides. Women in Combat. It's the new military policy and the topic of our conversation today. Still with us is journalist and author Tanya Bianc. She wrote Army Wives, the basis for the hit television series. Her new book is entitled Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Service Women in Today's Military. Joining us now from St. Louis is longtime conservative activist, syndicated columnist, and radio commentator Phyllis Schlafly, whose monthly newsletter, The Phyllis Schlafly Report, is in its 46th year. Welcome to the show, Phyllis Schlafly.
Hello, Ann. Good to join you.
In an Eagle Forum column from January 30th, you raised the issue of whether the policy change is even constitutional. Isn't it that the president does have the authority as commander-in-chief or not?
Well, this is a very important step, and the Congress has never voted to put women in military combat. And I think that should be a public decision, not just a Panetta decision.
What about the process of just approving women in military in the first place?
Well, that never went through hearings. Mm-hmm. It was a kind of a sneaky deal when they did it. And they did it really without the approval of the American people. But we've lived with it. I'm sure there's some very brave women who've done wonderful jobs in the military.
Do you, in general, oppose women in the military?
Well, I oppose it as being a compulsory thing.
Mm-hmm.
You see, for 10 years I fought the Equal Rights Amendment, and the Equal Rights Amendment really would have made it compulsory to have no discrimination or difference of treatment. And there are a lot of differences of treatment in the way they have women. They are not sending them in these little bands to go out and kill the enemy. A lot of people have a very sanitized version of what combat is all about. They think you go out and have a little gunfight, and then you come back and you have separate hot showers and a nice mess hall to eat. Well, combat isn't like that.
You also...
And anyway, mm-hmm. The other thing is, this whole push to put them in combat is coming from the officer women, the feminist officers who want higher rank and can't get the 3 or 4 stars unless they have some combat experience. And they don't dare to survey the enlisted women who would get the brunt of this policy.
Tanya Bianc, what is your impression of where the push for putting women in combat is coming from after the years of research for your book?
I think it came about because it's an affirmation of where the military was already headed. And that was based on... what has gone on over the last 10 plus years, first in Iraq, now in Afghanistan. 250,000 women have deployed. They've served side by side with men. They've proven that they're an integral part of the mission, that the military mission could not have been successful without their talent and expertise and their participation.
Phyllis Schlafly, you also question whether combat assignments for women will be based on gender norming, and in other words, that equal effort equals equal results.
And... Well, somebody just sent me a Marine publication in which they say very clearly that the Marines will replace the flexed arm hang for female Marines in the physical fitness test within the year. And males and females will do pull-ups for the physical fitness test. However, the scoring will differ. And I quote General Richard Mills, the events are gender neutral, but the scoring is gender norm because there are physical differences between males and females. And you know, one of the things I object to most is the way they lie to us. And they make the men lie to us and say they're really, the women are doing the same as men. And I ask you, why weren't there any women playing in the Super Bowl? There is a basic difference between men and women.
What about that Tania Bianc? Does that bother women? Is that something that, I mean, she must have come up before this.
Well, the Super Bowl, the NFL, I mean, I don't think that's a really good comparison. That's a sport. People watch it for entertainment. It's ratings driven. It's not run by a governmental body like the U.S. government. So I don't know if you can compare service women to the NFL when you're talking about world-class athletes. Yes, there is a difference with upper body strength between men and women that has been scientifically proven. Yes, women get pregnant. Men do not. But you know what? I think what service women bring to the fight, what they contribute, far outweighs any negative. They have proven that they are tough, they're talented, they're smart, and they're capable. And that is why Leon Panetta and General Dempsey lifted this ban.
I think you have to face the fact that I think there are just plenty of people in this country who have no respect for men who send women out to do their fighting. When you hear a sound in the house in the middle of the night, you think the husband says to his wife, honey, you go down and take care of that.
I think times have changed. I think it's an outdated way of thinking, and I think that lifting this ban puts men and women on equal footing, and I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing for not only our service women, but it's a good thing for our military.
I'd like to hear from women out there who have served in the military, who are veterans, or who are now in active service.
And who are enlisted women.
And enlisted women.
We want to hear from the enlisted women who would bear the brunt of this change.
One way or the other, I'd like to hear from women in the military. If you could give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'd like to hear from you, hear what your point of view is. You can also go to our Facebook page, and you can tweet us at WOSU All Sides if that works better for you. Phyllis Schlafly, you've said you're concerned about sexual assaults increasing with women in combat roles. Shouldn't that be a problem for the perpetrators and not the victims?
Well, they say there are all kinds of examples of women are complaining about harassment, and you put them out on the field away from civilization. It can't help but increase and interfere with this band of brothers effect of the little squad going out to kill the enemy. It's not just a gunfight from some distance. You know, they don't dare take a survey of the enlisted women in the military. They stopped that years ago because they don't get the answer they want.
Which is?
Well, the enlisted women do not want to be put into combat. And, of course, when you're in the military, you do what you're told.
The military way of life is premised on discipline. Why can't that discipline be expected to extend to sexual relations? Why does there have to be a discipline breakdown when you're out on patrol?
Well, there is a factor of sex, and the women in the military now are complaining about a great deal of sexual harassment. And you put them out on some lonely escapade to go out and kill the enemy, it can't help but make the problem even worse.
Okay, we're going to take some calls. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you'd like to give us a call, if you're a woman who's been in the military, now in the military, enlisted or otherwise, give us a call, and we'd like to talk to you. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We are on the air with Tania Bianc. She is the author of Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Service Women in Today's Military, and also with conservative activist Phyllis Schlafly. She is an author and a founder of the Eagle Forum. Catherine in Columbus, you're on the air. You're in the military, correct? Hi, Catherine.
Hello.
Hi,
my name is Jenna.
Jenna?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm a captain in the Army. I think they must have thought I said Catherine.
Okay.
I just wanted to comment as far as some of the things that have been said regarding the inequalities in a combat situation. I'm a military police officer. I served in Iraq 2008 to 2009. And I was also married to a service member. My husband was actually killed in action in Iraq in 2007. And, that has obviously given me a certain perspective on the experience that I've had, but it's not been a bad one. I can say that for sure. As being a woman, I felt very much respected, and I was a platoon leader for a platoon of 40 MPs where I was one of the only women and did not experience any of the problems of different conditions or different treatment just because of that. If I got that from anybody, it was actually the Iraqis and not my soldiers.
What about the idea that Phyllis has brought up about equal effort, that they're measuring equal effort, not necessarily results when it comes to, as combat assignments?
Do you mean, do I think that we're capable of doing the same things under the same conditions that men are expected to do?
Well, I guess, say you're assigned to do 10 pull-ups, and you can't do 10 pull-ups, but you do enough pull-ups to satisfy the military, whereas the men have to do 10 pull-ups, and assignments are based on that.
Right. I mean, I certainly understand that for certain jobs and under certain conditions, there's a reason for the pull-ups. The pull-ups aren't just to show off how many pull-ups you can do. It's because you need to be able to use your upper body strength for certain assignments. Now, I mean, to provide an example, I was a paratrooper at Fort Bragg. I was a jump master as well. And so I had to be able to do a certain number of pull-ups to pass airborne school. And it wasn't just to be able to do the pull-ups. It was to be able to pull down on the parachute itself when I was in the process of landing. So there's a practical reason for having those things, not just as like a differentiator. And I think that that's where the difference would come. Can they do the things that they're required to do? Not necessarily. Can they do the exact same number that their body may not be quite made in the same way to be as good at naturally? Although I've seen many
You need the upper body strength when you're in combat to carry your 200-pound buddy, wounded buddy, off the field.
Of course.
And women can't do that.
That's not true, ma'am. I have known many women that can outrun and outlift and outpush many men, and I've seen it myself.
Carry a 200-pound wounded man.
Sure, ma'am. Absolutely.
Jenna, are you enlisted?
No, I'm a captain.
He's a captain.
All the
pressure is coming from the officers. It's not coming from the enlisted women.
Okay.
Yes, but ma'am, it's wrong to say that that enlisted women don't want to be in combat, too. There are many that feel the exact opposite because of the very fact that they can't have the same opportunities to excel and to proceed as far as promotion is concerned without those opportunities. They want them. I mean, I would have chosen infantry too if I'd been able to when that was my branch. It was branch decision day for me, but I didn't have that option.
Because is the deal when you're enlisted that without the combat experience, that's one of the biggest hurdles for enlisted women?
I don't think that that's true. I mean, okay. I think certainly if you want to, in certain fields, in certain limited fields, that's true.
Okay.
But as far as overall success and ability to excel, combat experience is generally, across the services at the moment, is valued. Any kind of combat experience is not going to be equal for any one person to another, but having the experience certainly gives you a good perspective on what to expect from your own soldiers and also how to understand what's going on. So it doesn't have to be in context of Special Forces or Delta. It can also be as an MP, an engineer. There are various options open. It's just you have some sort of experience.
Jenna, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it.
Thank you, ma'am. Bye.
Yeah, when you're in the military, it's not an option. When you're in war, you do what you're told. And if the rule is they can't pretend, that they can't say there's any difference between men and women, then the women will be sent and assigned. And it's not, young lady, do you want to go into combat? No. If the rule has changed, it's you go when you're sent. And that has never been approved by the American people. It's never been approved by Congress. The push is coming solely from the officer corps of the feminists who want their higher rank.
Well, all right, let's just say that is the case. Why shouldn't they get the higher rank if they want it? Because of combat.
You mean without combat?
Correct. I mean, if that's preventing them from getting a higher rank.
No. Combat is supposed to be somebody who knows what real war is.
Right. So
and then there's the thing. If you have to face up to the Supreme Court decision in Roster versus Goldberg, which said the only reason women don't have to be drafted like men, and the draft law is the classic sex discriminatory law. It says male citizens of age 18 must register, is because women are exempted from combat. Now, if you put women in combat, that means that the draft registration law has to apply to 18-year-old girls and boys. The American people don't want that. They've never voted for it. Maybe somebody like this caller thinks that would be a good idea, but you can't sell that to the American people.
Tanya Bianc?
I disagree with that. Times have changed, I think, with selective service. This should be a shared sacrifice.
Well, that's your opinion.
Phyllis Schlafly, I'm sorry, that's what I want to hear is her opinion.
Just like you, ma'am, you have been giving your opinion. I'm now giving mine. It's a privilege to be an American. We're blessed as a nation, and it's something we shouldn't take for granted. And why should half the population be exempt from signing up for selective service? There's a cultural shift is going on in our country, and ultimately it's going to be up to Congress to make this decision on selective service.
Well, all that is your opinion. It's not the law. And the American people don't want it to be the law.
Well,
and you cannot show that they
American,
want it to be a law.
The American, I mean, you were just now giving your opinion. I don't.
No, I was giving you
the
law.
Public.
I was giving you the law and the Supreme Court decision.
Right, and I think it's going to, now with the lifting of this combat ban, that law is going to be looked at for sure.
It's going to change?
I didn't say it was going to change. I said it's going to be looked at. It's going to be examined.
Phyllis Schlafly, are you saying you think it should? All right, let's say women are allowed to participate in combat now and be assigned to combat positions. Should they now be drafted then?
Of course women should not be drafted. You understand this whole feminist push for women in combat is based on their dogma that the genders are interchangeable, the interchangeability of the genders. And they are not the same. They are different. And we want to respect those differences.
Do you think women should be in the military at all?
That's all right. I have a lot of friends who served in the military in World War II. There are a lot of jobs women can do that are fine. But going out in a small squad to kill the enemy is not one of them.
Well, all right. Then driving a truck over...
they can drive trucks.
Over a bomb, that's okay.
Well,
because that's one of the most dangerous jobs in the Army in this war.
Yes, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the small squads of men who are specially trained to go out and kill the enemy. And centuries of experience with war show that is best done by men.
Mm-hmm. Women have, in the last 10 years, women have been assigned to those infantry platoons and squads that are doing exactly that as medics, also on the female engagement teams. Very dangerous jobs. And guess what we have found? They've been an integral part of the mission. The battlefield commanders have reported back that they could not have done the mission without the participation of these women.
Let's hear a poll of the enlisted women.
I don't know why we keep
because we differentiate only hear from the
between enlisted women and officers. I think it's actually what you're saying is an insult to our very brave and capable and talented enlisted service women.
Well, the feminists seem to get insulted easily.
I don't know if throwing this term around of feminist. I don't think this is a feminist issue. I think this is a humanist issue and about equal rights and fairness.
Phyllis Schlafly, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate
it. Okay, you can get more information on my website, eagleforum.org.
All right, we'll post it at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We'll return to our conversation about women in the military / women in combat. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This week, we learned the IRS was specifically targeting conservative groups to make their lives miserable. This is wrong and un-American. Everybody knows the IRS is supposed to make all our lives miserable, without regard to political belief. I'm Peter Sagal. Join us for the news quiz that offends everybody according to their need. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturday morning at 11 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Foundation, thanking WOSU and others who make Columbus a smart and open community. At the Columbus Foundation, personal service and community pride combine to help donors help others through impactful philanthropy, big or small. It's here that history resounds and opportunity abounds.
I'm Tom Asbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, IRS and AP scandals, White House damage control, more military sex abuse, Angelina Jolie. Our weekly news roundtable goes behind the headlines. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
This afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News.
The WOSU Member Card Benefit of the Month for May is the Gateway Film Center. Enjoy two-for-one admission all month long. Visit WOSU.org.
Welcome back. We're talking about women in combat. It is the new military policy and the topic of our conversation today. Still with us is journalist and author Tanya Bianc, who wrote Army Wives. It's the basis for that hit television series you've heard about or watched. Her new book is entitled Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. Once again, Tanya, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, glad to be here, Anne.
Joining us now from Virginia is Stars and Stripes Pentagon reporter Jennifer Ladd. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hi, thank you.
Jennifer, is there a sense of the reaction to the announcement of women in the military inside the Pentagon? I mean, what are people talking about?
Well, it's kind of hard to gauge inside the Pentagon exactly, but we know that service members all around the world are reacting to this announcement, of course, and certainly some service members inside the Pentagon as well. It kind of depends on who you talk to, honestly. A lot of male service members are not happy about the change. Some male service members are happy, of course, about the change or are kind of neutral about it. Mm-hmm. But it seems like most women I've talked to are either neutral or excited that they will now have the opportunity to be assigned to jobs that were previously closed to them.
Have you seen or read about or heard about a distinction in the attitude, pro or con, between enlisted women and non-enlisted women in the military?
Well, so I've talked to several women about it. In fact, last night I was just talking to a woman who was enlisted for several years and now is an officer. And she is in sort of the neutral camp. She said she's a Marine, and she said that she didn't really think about that when she was joining the Marine Corps, and she didn't necessarily have a burning desire to sign up for any kind of infantry unit, but she also is of the feeling that if the Marine Corps tells her to go somewhere, she goes there. So, and I think on the officer side, maybe it's a little bit more muted reaction, where maybe the enlisted side, male and female, no matter how they feel, it's a little bit more extreme, I guess.
Is that because they just feel more comfortable expressing themselves?
It may be that. The other thing is, I think that a lot of people are concerned about how it's going to work exactly. And what the officials here have been saying is that there are going to be gender-neutral standards for these jobs. And I think a lot of people don't believe that that is true. They just don't believe that there are going to be gender-neutral physical standards. And I think they are thinking of the physical fitness tests, which mm-hmm. currently are not gender-neutral. But these gender-neutral physical tests that they're talking about are, of course, they haven't set them yet, so we don't know exactly what they are. But I think what they're talking about is more something like, can you carry X amount of weight for you know, on a hike for an hour? Can you lift a something that is as heavy as a piece of artillery for a tank and turn and, you know, load it into the tank mm-hmm. within a certain, you know, a certain space restriction? It's not about who can do how many pull-ups or how fast they can run necessarily.
It's going to be more task-specific.
Exactly.
And if you can't, it doesn't mean you get kicked out of the Army or whatever. It means you
exactly.
can't be assigned to that particular job.
Exactly. And, you know, there already are tests and courses that you have to pass in order to be an infantry officer or an infantry soldier or Marine. And so I think that they may be making them harder for men and women, but it is supposed to be gender neutral. As far as the reaction, though, I mean, I know there are people who, men and women, who do not, who are not on board with this. And certainly there are women who do not want to be with an infantry battalion or in a combat situation. But I think that most people who join the military recognize that because of the way that warfare is now, you can't really control. If you join the military, it's possible that you will be in some sort of combat situation.
You'll be exposed to danger.
Right, exactly. You will be exposed to danger, and it's possible that you could get hurt or even killed no matter what your job is or what unit you're assigned to. If you're deployed to Afghanistan, it really, of course, if you're in the infantry, you're going to be exposed to more danger than if you're an administrative clerk, but that doesn't mean you're not going to be exposed to any danger if you're an administrative clerk. So,
do we have any sense about what impact this might have on recruiting? Up or down?
Well, the Marine Corps had done a survey to try to find out, of the people already in the Marine Corps, to try to find out if this would have discouraged anyone from joining, if the combat exclusion policy had already been lifted. And they found, and I think that they were actually a little bit surprised about this, that most women said that they still would have joined if they knew that they could be assigned to combat units. And, you know, a lot of those women would have, I think it was actually a majority of the women would have attempted to, well, a majority of the women would have certainly joined. And then a lot of the women would have actually volunteered for those units. And there were some men who said, I wouldn't have joined the Marine Corps if I had known that women could be assigned to these units. But that was a pretty small number. So I think that as far as recruiting goes, right now the military, all branches of the military, or actually the Army and the Marine Corps are getting smaller. And we're not in a situation like 2007, 2008, where it's really hard to find the amount of recruits that they need. Mm-hmm. Right now, they're actually turning people away. So I don't think it's going to have a bad impact on recruiting. I think, you know, if somebody just doesn't want to join the military, then that's okay, because there are several other people who do want to join.
Listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'd like to hear from women in the military, enlisted or otherwise. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page as well and post your comment there. My guests, Jennifer Ladd, she's a reporter for Stars and Stripes, and also Tanya Bianc, she's the author of Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. Every year, it seems like the military is opening up more and more jobs to women. I mean, was this just sort of the next one on the list? Jennifer, is there a sense about that?
Yes, I think that there has been a sense for a long time that this has been coming. Early last year, the DOD opened up more jobs. A couple hundred thousand, tens of thousands more jobs. I don't think it was 100,000 more jobs, but two women that were previously closed. And I think everyone sort of knew that eventually this was going to happen. And part of it is just because of the way that warfare has changed, the fact that a lot of the arguments that have been made in the past about women's capabilities or women's you know, we don't want to see women get hurt. Well, you know, women already are getting hurt. Or women aren't physically capable of doing X, Y, and Z. Well, in a lot of cases, women have already shown on the battlefield that they can do many of these things. Of course, women have not been infantry soldiers yet, but as far as being in a firefight or proving their marksmanship skills, they have, some women have proven that they are really great at that. So I think people knew it was coming. They just weren't sure that it was coming this soon.
Is it accurate to say that all they're doing is applying the same criteria for women as they do men? In other words, not all men who enlist or who join the military are sharpshooters.
Right.
Not all men in the military can lift a 200-pound man and drag him out of harm's way. Right?
Exactly. Well, and I think that yes and no. I mean, I think they are going to create some new standards that don't exist right now for certain jobs, but those standards will apply to men and women. And like you said, I mean, not every man can do these things that people are talking about. And I think sometimes people consider the average woman and the average man, and I don't think we're talking about the average woman and the average man here. I think that we're talking about a select group of women who are maybe a lot more physically fit and a lot stronger, maybe a lot faster than the average woman, and who can, you know, maybe are taller, maybe they're not. Mm-hmm. But, you know, not every man who is in the military is 6 feet tall and 200 pounds, like you said. So that just because a man is 100 pounds and 5 feet tall, and there are men who are in the military who are smaller than I am, and I'm 5'3", they may not be able to drag a 250-pound man either, but just the fact that their certain height doesn't disqualify them. So I think they still have to go through this training, mm-hmm. and if they can pass it, they can do it. Same with women now.
Tanya Bianc, in the course of writing your book, what about the issue of sexual assault that Phyllis Schlafly raised earlier in the conversation? Is it getting worse? Is it getting better? Is this just, in from what you understand about this issue, is it going to be affected?
Well, sexual assault is certainly an issue in the military. One recent study surveyed 1,100 servicewomen who had recently redeployed from Afghanistan and asked them about sexual harassment and sexual assault. Half of these deployed women had said they had been sexually harassed. A quarter of them said that they had been sexually assaulted. The conviction rate for sexual assault and rape in the military is very low. It's under 6% in some cases. And Leon Panetta has called this an outrage. And so, you know, I think the military has to, there's a perception in the military that the victim will be punished for coming forward and that the perpetrator is going to be protected. And I think the military, there's been a lot of media has focused on this, and I think the military is taking this issue very seriously now, and it's certainly something to watch in the future, but I think it's a separate issue when you're talking about lifting this combat ban for women. I think the sexual assault is a different piece.
Jennifer Ladd, Phyllis Schlafly, kind of in her article last month in her newsletter, brought up the issue of the Band of Brothers. Well, what do you call mm-hmm. it when a woman's part of that Band of Brothers? She's qualified. She has the intellect. She has the physical capabilities to be in that select, you know, elite squad. She's a sharpshooter or whatever her expertise is. Are those the less likely assignments for women? They are anyways, I suppose.
Right,
but.
Exactly. I mean, it depends, of course, which service and everything else. And I think something to keep in mind is that nobody right now, at least, is talking about assigning someone to a job that they don't want and that they're not qualified for. We're talking about people who have to go through you can certainly be assigned a military occupational specialty that was not your first choice, but mm-hmm. you still have to go through a training and testing process to make it, for lack of a better term. So, I mean, I think it can still be a band of brothers, even if there's a few sisters involved.
It's just semantics, right?
Right, exactly. And I think also, you know, I mean, there are women in the military right now, and there are other units that have good unit cohesion that include women. I think it is going to be, unfortunately, I think that in some cases it may be more difficult for women to, you know, start fitting into those units than men, and that's going to be a leadership issue. The leadership of the unit has to really get involved and make sure that there aren't extra problems. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, there are women who were the only woman in a unit full of logisticians or, you know, administrative clerks, legal clerks, certainly pilots, and that's all worked out pretty fine so far.
Okay.
So I think that we can do that. And actually, I was going to say on the sexual assault issue, mm-hmm. I think that certainly it's a huge issue, and the DOD does seem to be taking it very seriously. But something that General Dempsey mentioned when they were talking about when they announced this change, lifting the combat exclusion policy, he said that he thought that it might actually help with the problem of sexual assault, partly because right now there's sort of like two classes of soldiers and Marines. There's the warrior, there's the infantry guy, and then there's everyone else. And because there's this institutionalized difference between the infantry and everyone else, and certainly between men and women. I mean, women have different physical fitness standards. Women mm-hmm. aren't allowed to do certain jobs. That creates an extra added tension there, where if women are in these units and they are a band of brothers, that they're not going to certainly be okay with their best friend, whatever gender that person may be, being sexually assaulted or sexually harassed. So it's possible that it could actually help. I mean, I don't know, of course, but that's something that General Dempsey said.
Jennifer Ladd, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jennifer Ladd, she's a reporter for Stars and Stripes, and Tanya Bianc, author of Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. Thanks for staying with us today, Tanya. We appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely, Ann.
And to everybody else, thanks for your calls. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.